Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
John Sauber now joins us from the Center Daily Times. John, always a pleasure. It was great to see you in Chicago. It was great to see you in Des Moines.
Hey, it's great seeing you too, Steve. I'm kind of glad to be sleeping in my bed. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I have the attitude of I wish I was preparing for one more game. But,
I would have loved to cover the Sweet 16, but this is a nice second prize of getting to be home for more than 26 hours.
Yes, your thoughts on what you did witness, especially over the last month.
Yeah, I came away from this. I talked to a lot of people, you know, around the program, a lot of people that cover the team and everything like that. And, you know, the general consensus is that I think this is pretty clearly, this was at least a top 25 team in the country. And they ran into a team that matched up well with them in Texas that is also a top, you know, 5 to 7 team in the country, right? Like, this is, I don't think there was a single team left in the NCAA tournament that I looked at and thought Penn State couldn't have beaten, quite frankly. And I think that's a testament to the coaching, to the players, to the way they play, and you know, the shots they were making down the stretch. It took, you know, them having one of their worst shooting performances of the season to lose to Texas. And mind you, I don't think this was, you know, a bad shot profile night either, right, where these were all contested looks. They were getting open looks, and they just kind of weren't falling. And that happens sometimes. But, I think that Penn State ended the year as one of the best teams in the country.
All right. Micah Shrewsbury, a year ago, looked at his team and said, look, they need to play defense. Simple as that. And, you know, play defense, run the clock, the whole deal, based on the personnel he had. Personnel he had with this team, he looked at it and said, you know what? Three-pointers, wide open, here we go, let's play. What does that tell us about a coach and his ability to adapt based on personnel?
Yeah, I think it says everything about Micah, right? How good of a coach he is. I think the goals are always going to be the same with this team, that on defense they want to funnel you to certain shot types, right? That they want you to take 18-footers. They don't want you to get open threes. They don't want you to get shots at the rim. And on offense, they're going to try to get to the rim. They're always going to try and shoot threes. But, you know, that will vary, like you said, depending on the personnel that you have. I think the pace will adjust depending on the personnel that you have. You know, they took care of the ball a ton this year. They did that last year, too. But I think that's Jalen Pickett-based more than anything, right, knowing that you can have him at the controls of the offense. But it shows that Micah can kind of adapt in these situations, that he's been able to adapt to the talent he has, to the weapons at his disposal. I do think this year is closer to the idealized version of what he wants the team and the program to look like, right, especially offensively. You want to play four out. Five out is more ideal, obviously, but at least four out and, you know, have someone that can pass the ball, you know, as a big man. And frankly, Jalen Pickett operated as that big man. I think Kevin Jai will be that in the future, as someone that is a really good passer for a big. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of adaptability and a lot of willingness to basically, you know, he tries to go out and get the guys that he needs, but whatever he has in the end, he's going to try and make it work as well as he can with those guys.
You mentioned Kevin Jai in that answer. Over the last month, how much better did he get?
He was phenomenal. I think, like, Texas, I don't want to call it a step back. It wasn't his best game. That was always going to be a tough matchup for him. But mentally, he's such a different player now than he was in November. I actually, you know, I asked him about that. I think it was Wednesday out in Des Moines when we had the open locker room. And one of the things he said was, you know, prior to, you know, sort of feeling comfortable at the beginning of the year, especially, he would feel like butterflies in his stomach and his knees would be shaky. Like, he was really genuinely nervous. And I think that also puts in good perspective that he is very much a kid still, right? Like, he's 18 and doesn't turn 19, I think, till August. But he is still learning and still adjusting. But he said that that's just not a thing anymore. And I asked him after the A&M game, and he said, no, I wasn't nervous at all. Like, you would think that maybe playing the NCAA tournament would kind of revert him back to maybe some of the nerves and some of the cautiousness, but that wasn't the case. It was, you know, abundantly clear on the court too, but it's good to hear him reaffirm that too, that this was you know, not the case. I think he just got comfortable, and he had to adjust to adding a lot of strength in the offseason, something he did before he even got to campus. He was still adjusting to that. He's still adjusting to college life. He's still adjusting to dealing with Big Ten bigs. And, you know, I think it all came together for him in a really positive way, and I think it's, you know, it's indicative of what he can be in the future.
Did this run by Penn State, where they won 9 of their last 12, and 7 of the wins were over NCAA tournament field teams. Beat Illinois twice, beat Northwestern twice, beat Maryland, beat Indiana, beat Texas A&M. Does this show what Penn State basketball can be?
Yeah, and I honestly think it can be more. I think basketball, especially with the state of the transfer portal, is a sport where you can kind of just decide to be good, right? And if you invest in the program and you put the resources into it and, you know, and try and back it, I think that this program, there's no reason it can't be, I know Wisconsin hasn't been as good lately, but a Wisconsin-type program where you routinely make in the NCAA tournament, routinely in the top half of the Big Ten, routinely competing for a legitimate, you know, Sweet 16, Final Fours, Elite Eights, what have you. I mean, it's really difficult to get there. We see it year in and year out. There's rarely any consistency anymore because it is so hard to be one of the last 8 to 16 teams in the country. But I think with the proper investment in the program, I don't think there's a reason to believe that they can't take the next step, right? We see it all the time. It's not like, you know, basketball programs are in hotbeds where it's like you have to be recruiting to these areas. And, like, you know, with football, it's generally the case. You'll see a lot of teams in the South succeed more and have a little bit easier transition to get to the point that the higher-end programs do because they have the talent pool. That's just not the case in basketball. Good players, there's no reason to believe that, especially with Micah Shrewsbury as the head coach, that this team can't be a consistent NCAA tournament for them.
And that's what you need at this point, obviously, to be a consistent threat. And that's where the transfer portal comes in. The transfer portal was important, how they plugged it with the Cam Winter and Andrew Funk. Mikey Hinn came in with this particular group. And it made a big difference to go with Jalen Pippen. So you look at the current roster makeup as to who's coming and going. And we'll have to wait and see on Seth Martin. You know, like I said, my advice is quite simple. Check out all the evaluations from the NBA you can and see what they say. Because you want what's best for Seth. But how do you look at this makeup and what would Penn State need in the transfer portal in your opinion?
Yeah, I think the first thing is a primary ball handler to replace Pickett. I think there is, you know, there's enough reason to believe that Evan Mahaffey can take on some of that role next year, that Kanye Clary can take on some of that role. But I still think there are more secondary guys with controlling the ball at this point. I think you want to go find someone that can control the offense, that can be your leading scorer, that can be your best distributor, that can attack the rim, that can score at all three levels. And I know that sounds like a natural player of the year candidate, and it probably is. But, you know, yes. Some level of that type of player that can come in and help out right away. I think, you know, depending on what happens with Lundy, I think getting some wings in to help would be big because you need guys that can guard. You know, Kemp Ajayi is a good starting five. I don't know that they ever want to be a massive team, you know, that's going to be feeding the post or anything like that. So I think getting some size on the wing will really help. I think they have some internal options to replace some of the shooting, right? Like, I think a lot of what Andrew Funk did, you know, it'll be different. It'll look a lot different, but I think Jameel Brown can replace some of that because he's an excellent shooter. He can shoot off the dribble, create for himself, and get to the rim. So I think some of that might be internal. But, and I know a lot of people have been talking about the need for a big man. I just don't think it's as pressing because I think Keba is going to eat up a lot of the minutes, even if it's 20 to 24. Then you talk about filling 16 to 20. Maybe, you know, you find another wing that you can play at the five and play small again. That eats up 8 of those minutes. And then suddenly you're talking about bringing in a guy to play 12 minutes. And, you know, who's to say that Demetrius Lillie can't just eat up that time, right? So I wouldn't mind if Penn State went and got a big. I think it has to be someone that's good and someone that's really going to contribute to make it worth it. I think there are those kind of guys out there, and they're targeting some right now. But, you know, I think I would prioritize the ball handling, the shooting, and the size on the wing more than anything else at this point.
What do you think Micah Shrewsbury's NBA background means, and then what does this past season mean in practical application to match that?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I said about the efficiency stuff, right? Like the, you know, teams in the NBA just play more modern basketball than most college teams at this point, right? And they develop players kind of with that in mind. They focus on, you know, getting guys that are skilled. It's not necessarily always about floor spacing. It's about guys who can do more than one thing, right? Like, you aren't finding many specialized guys as much in the NBA, and I think you'll see Mike's teams, that'll be a feature. I've talked about a lot, like, Andrew Funk, he'll get a lot of credit for being an elite shooter because he is one, but he can also attack closeouts. He can attack off the dribble. He can finish at the rim because he had the ball in his hand so much at Bucknell. So I think it's going to lead to essentially a roster construction that always looks like that, where there isn't just this guy only shoots, or oh, this guy only defends, or this guy is only, you know, a creative passer. There will be a bunch of guys that that can do everything, and I think this roster is a good indication of that, right? Like, Cam Winner could find his spots on the floor, but he was also a good passer, and he was competitive defensively, even if he didn't have great size. Funk, I already mentioned, you know, what he did. Pickett was good on both ends of the court, could do everything offensively. You know, the freshman coming in, Logan Himes, is a multifaceted player on offense, can kind of do everything. Brayden Shrewsbury, of course, is an excellent shooter, but we're seeing that he can create a little bit of the dribble, too, and Gary Booth, same way. So I think you're seeing that, you know, it's all of these guys that have multiple skills. They're not isolated to doing one thing. That's the only thing that they do well, and I think that really adds a layer of dimension to the offense and frankly, to the defense, where guys can go out on and off the ball well.
I'm not surprised, to be honest with you, about the Big Ten. I mean, look, only Penn State and Michigan State, they're the only two that exceeded their seeds in the tournament. And to be honest with you, John, I wasn't surprised. I sort of was expecting this, because I've been saying for, Matt knows, maybe a month and a half, been saying that Purdue was not going to get out of the weekend. Well, they didn't even get out of Friday, but yeah. I'm saying I'm not really surprised by it.
Yeah, I don't know that I am either, honestly. And I think some people may think I'm crazy for saying this, but I honestly thought Penn State was the team most well equipped to make a run because of the way they play.
Yes.
The Big Ten has, the pace is slow, which Penn State's slow too, but they aren't slow with, you know, they're going to post-ups and they're, you know, the guy's backing someone down for 4 minutes. They do it with Pickett, but Pickett is making quick decisions off that, right? He's getting to a post-up, and then he's either getting a shot quickly or he's making a quick decision to spray the ball around and get those high-efficiency looks. But you're right, like, it's a conference that's not built for modern college basketball in a lot of ways, right? Like, there's still spotting, and the physicality, I think, that teams get away with, then they show up in March and suddenly everyone's in foul trouble, right? Like, I think that there needs to be a shift more toward the way that, you know, other coaches and other conferences coach. I think Shrewsbury's brought that in a lot of ways. You know, I think Matt Painter's teams are kind of a good example of that. They just, you know, this year, I think because they're so ED-centric, like, it's essentially him and everyone else on that team, and they were always kind of destined to fall off soon, like you said, because of that. But, you know, he also plays in a way that I think can be more conducive to March. It just kind of hasn't worked out for one reason or another at different times.
Right.
But I think that's the style of play that coaches kind of have to pivot to. Ohio State, actually, I think, was a good example of this, that, you know, had they somehow won the Big Ten tournament, I think they could have made some noise in March because, like, they play that way, too. They're trying to push the pace. They're trying to hunt efficient shots and, you know, be competitive defensively.
Well, notice what Michigan State has done in the tournament. Michigan State has pushed the pace much more because now the floor is more wide open than it was during the Big Ten season. And Dick Girardi came up with a good one, and he comes up with a lot of good ones, but this was a beauty. He said, Micah Shrewsbury is the Big Ten basketball, what Joe Tiller was the Big Ten football.
Yes, exactly. And it's the parallels are really evident, too, even with the spacing aspect, right? Because we're learning more and more in sports in general that the more space guys that have to operate, the better they are, especially when it comes to, you know, in basketball, guys with the ball in their hands, in football with, you know, guys with the ball in their hands, but receivers and skill position players. I think that's a great comparison, right? Like, it's all about spacing on offense and getting your guys opportunities to make things happen and use their talent, use their abilities, rather than trying to operate in a phone booth, you know. And I think that, you know, Big Ten basketball needs to trend in that direction like Big Ten football has, and we're seeing there's a reason that, you know, Ohio State and Penn State are usually two of the better offenses in the Big Ten. And football, it's because they, you know, spread everything out and let guys go to work You know, it impacts the running game and the passing game in football. It impacts everything in basketball. I think, you know, that is where this needs to go. Otherwise, the conference is going to eventually fall behind. And if it hasn't already, by the
way. I mean, it makes for an incredibly competitive regular season. There's no question about that.
Absolutely.
And the games are close, and, you know, and everything comes down to the wire. And Penn State played, according to Ken Pom, the 17th toughest schedule in the country this year. And that's obviously with all the groupings and teams that they played along the way. But then you get to the NCAA tournament. The game is not played in a phone booth. And DeSue played terrific, but he did not play the same way as the bigs in the Big Ten play.
Right. And I think the other thing is that the example of sort of why it goes wrong is that Indiana team that we saw last night against Miami. They take way too many long twos, right? Like it seems like they're encouraged to pass up open threes and take long twos, and so they're already losing the efficiency battle. And so then you're kind of just relying on Trace Jackson Davis to carry the team, and man, he almost did last night before it kind of got out of hand late. But yeah, you're putting too much on guys on an individual basis to get everything done, and it mucks up the game and kind of spalls everything out offensively. You're right, the competitiveness in the regular season is nice. I don't think it sets the conference well up, though, in the postseason. And DeSue, like, for as good as he was, too, he kind of took the shots that Penn State wanted him to take. And listen, sometimes a guy's going to make a 10- to 15-foot push shot over and over again.
Yes.
You just live with the result. But like you said, that kind of athleticism, that ability to get into those spaces as a big is not something the team is used to seeing. I think they prepared well for it, and they handled it the right way. But it's still like, you know, it says something about the coaching staff and how good they are that they were that ready after not facing something, that kind of strategy all season, not seeing that kind of player pretty much all season.
John, great work. It was great to see out at both Chicago and Des Moines. You did some great work all around. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that. I had a lot of fun out there, and I really enjoyed seeing you out there as well.
Appreciate it, John. We'll talk shortly because there's a lot of football and draft to talk about, too.
That's right. We're already here.
It's already here, and Friday is pro day, so there we go. And I can assure you in no uncertain terms, Sovereign and Jones are not running 40s.
I might not be able to walk a 40 at this point.
We are observers. Veteran observer.
That's right.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.